Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
All right. Another day, another Wordle.
Whose turn is it to pick a word today?
Yours. I had it yesterday.
I'm going to go with train.
I'm going to start with sweet.
I'm going to start with third. The T is somewhere, but not there, and the I is in the right place. So
one I, one S, one T.
I'm going to try the word foils. Just came to me. No idea why. Okay, O, I are in the right place. S is in the word, but not at the end.
I'm going to think it's S, T, so something O, something S, T.
Blank O, I, S. Okay, so maybe hoist, H, O, I. I-S-T.
Let's see. Hoist, maybe? H-O-I-S-T. Enter.
The O is for sure. Oh my god, I might not get it today. This is so embarrassing. Okay. Hoist.
Hoist. H-O-I-S-T. Hoist.
Ooh.
So every letter is correct except for the H.
All right. Next guess. I'm going with moist. M-O-I-S-T. Oh, yeah. Got it.
I want to try my least favorite word, which is moist. M-O-I-S-T.
M-O-I-S-T. Moist. That's it.
Oh, my God. I'm good.
Voila! That is the word of the day.
The wonder of Wordle. And don't worry, moist isn't today's word. No spoilers here. I just did it, and I got it in four guesses. I'm kind of a middling Wordle newbie. But that little internet word game with its little green and yellow squares, it's the best kind of viral phenomenon, isn't it? Simple, engaging, free. Gives you a bit of joy, which we all certainly need first thing in the morning. But how? Why? What is it about Wordle that makes it work? Well, that's what we're going to talk about today. But I actually want to start with a little peek behind the scenes here at On Point, because we were in the process of producing today's show over a couple of days, and we were trying to book Josh Wardle, the creator of Wordle, because of course we wanted to ask him about the love story behind the game and about how Wordle went from 90 users last November to 300,000 mid-January to millions of players around the world today. But no matter what we did, no matter what we tried, Josh just would not talk to us, and we couldn't figure out why. And then, in the midst of all this effort, bam! News breaks on Monday that Josh sold his game to the New York Times. Oh, okay, so it all starts making sense now, because we really do get perplexed when people just don't even get back to us when we request interviews here. So all I have to say is, Josh, bravo, actually. You gave the world a beautiful little gift, and you definitely deserve to benefit from that and get some relief from managing those millions of game lovers. So, instead of starting with Josh Wardle today, we're going to start with Wordle's new owner, the New York Times. Jonathan Knight is the general manager of games at the New York Times, and he joins us now. Welcome to On Point, Jonathan.
Thank you, Meghna. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so I'm going to start off with a listener question, which is pretty much the only question which almost every Wordle player cares about. Here's Lena from Detroit.
Just want to know how much the New York Times is going to charge us now to play it every day. I feel like it's something that we all had to look forward to every day, and now it's been brought and for a profit. So kind of disappointed about that. Probably won't be playing in the future, but would love to hear what they have to say about it.
Okay, Jonathan, what do you think?
Well, I can be reassuring on that front. When the game comes to New York Times shortly, it will be free to play for everyone. We're like just really focused on continuing the game and continuing to, we're like committed to what makes it special and really think of ourselves as stewards of the game.
Okay. So I have to ask though, because words really matter in a game about words. And I'm looking at the New York Times' own coverage about the Times purchase of Wordle. And there's this interesting word in there. It says that the game will be initially free to new and existing players. That initially is doing a lot of work there. So eventually, is the Times, could the Times put it behind the game's paywall?
Well, you know, like I said, I'm not like, we don't have any forward-looking statements. We're not looking that far into the future. It's going to be free to play. We're focused on continuing that. I think, you know, we have other games that are free to play. The Crossword Mini is free to play every day for people. The Spelling Bee is free to play. You know, there's sort of higher ranks of Spelling Bee if you're a subscriber. Our large format crossword puzzle requires a subscription. So there's a lot of different models out there. I think, you know, this game, you know, it's just got such a huge audience. And what we're really focused on is like maintaining that engagement with that audience. It's just it's a wonderful daily habit. If we can introduce that audience to the New York Times, if we can introduce the New York Times to that audience and just, you know, have more people engaging with the New York Times, that's really our goal.
A little gateway drug then to the New York Times. Okay, I'm going to, I'll let you off the hook about that question because I know we're probably not going to get much further on that. But as you know, because of the fact that millions of people around the world now play it, they really care. This game has become a source of kind of unremitting daily joy for people in a time where, boy, do we ever need it. So tell me a little bit, Jonathan, what was it about Wordle that the Times felt was such a good match for the games that that are already under the banner of the New York Times?
Well, first of all, I count myself in that group. I really wake up every morning thinking about Wordle, like a lot of people. I think what really makes it special, it's a few things, but I think first and foremost is we're all trying to find the same five-letter word, and that really brings us together. And it's just one word a day, so there's a kind of rarity to it. It leaves you wanting a little more, but it is a kind of collective search for that one word. And yeah, it is a time when we all need to be brought together more. So I love that about it. I think there's other things that make it special, the way, you know, as you make a guess and it's not quite right, and you get the feedback with the green and yellow squares, it's almost like there's another new puzzle to solve. And then you make another guess and now there's another puzzle to solve. So it has kind of layers to it. And there's a little bit of drama as you kind of work through the day. I really enjoyed listening to your listeners at the top of the segment, you know, sort of talking through their experience and that really captures it. I would say finally, like the way that you can share when you're done that little grid of green and yellow squares. It's, you know, it's not a lot of people, you know, a lot of games will just have a share button and say, you know, share that you played Wordle today, but that there's more to it with this game. You're not just sharing the fact that you played, you're sharing, frankly, a little story, kind of a little narrative about how you solved it that day specifically. And every grid is kind of unique. And you know, but it doesn't give away the answer either. So mm-hmm. You can share it out and, you know, in my friend group, my WhatsApp chat list, like people are unpacking, you know, what you must have guessed to get it wrong. And, you know, I got it in two and, oh no, I took me six. And it's just, it doesn't get old. And I think that's really magical.
Yeah. Yeah. When did you first play it or first hear about it?
I first heard about it just at the top of the year, to be honest. I wasn't part of the December cohort, if you will. The game was gaining steam in December, but you know, I had a lot of other things going on and missed it. It was really right after the new year. Somebody slacked me about it and we started playing it. You know, yeah. I think a lot of people on my team had already been playing it and it kind of went from there.
You know what I love about it is that, and actually it was a Times piece that told the behind the scenes story of Wordle to the world, that, you know, Josh had made it for as an act of love, essentially, for his girlfriend. So he made it for an audience of one, just to give her a little bit of happiness every day. And that, to me, is what is the core reason for the game's success. Like, he was just thinking of pleasing one person. And it turns out the same things that please one individual that he loves work for us all. Now, I'm wondering, the Times has, if I understand this correctly, Jonathan, a pretty robust game development group, right? Did you guys, when you saw Wordle for the first time, were you like, oh, why didn't we think of this?
Well, I mean, it's a great question. And I don't think that was quite the reaction, although I will say that the game shares a lot of the same, I would say, creative pillars that we seek to achieve as we develop games internally. And we think those filters, you know, are, you know, even Josh Wardle said that he and his partner played a lot of Spelling Bee. They play a lot of the mini crossword, and there's just a lot of kind of shared values between those games. So we instantly recognized it as a game that we thought could be a New York Times game.
Yeah. Have you ever gone through all six guesses and not gotten it?
I have a perfect streak at the moment, so I have to say the answer is no. But I have gotten close a few times.
Okay. Now, tell me, just we've got about a minute left. I have a couple more quick questions for you, Jonathan. Since I have you, more broadly, how do games fit into the New York Times portfolio? I mean, like, the Times games are like cultural forces in and of themselves. So tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, great question. So, games have been for a very long time a big part of the experience of, you know, reading the New York Times. The first crossword puzzle ran in 1942, and, you know, it was somewhat controversial at the time, but the publisher felt quite strongly that, you know, in a time of war where the news was just really terrible to read every day, that there should be a diversion and there should be a little bit of joy at the end of your news experience. And that really, I think, continues through to today. You know, the New York Times has a collection of products. We have a cooking product. We have an audio product. We have Wirecutter, which is kind of product recommendations. And we have games. And, you know, the news will always be the center of the solar system, if you will. But increasingly, these other planets, these products play a really vital role in, you know, our audience and their needs and how they're seeking to engage with the world.
Yeah. And since you used the word product, I'm going to ask you again. Do you commit to keeping it free? Do you commit to keeping Wordle free, Jonathan?
Well, I always have to be careful about predicting the future, and I'm not trying to dodge anything. It's just like I don't have a crystal ball. We're certainly committed to the free experience. We're bringing it to the New York Times for free as we speak.
Yeah.
And we're going to go from there.
Jonathan Knight, games manager at the New York Times, thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back in just a minute. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we are talking about the phenomenon that is Wordle. Here's Lainey from Virginia.
I am an avowed Wordle addict, Meghna. I can't stop playing it. I found an archive, because one a day isn't doing it for me. So I've just been furiously playing those. And I'm hooked. I don't know what it is about it. It's just so cool and challenging and satisfying. And I'm sad that the New York Times bought it because I know that it's going to, I mean, I already subscribe to the New York Times games, but for people who don't want to or can't, you know, they're going to have to subscribe yearly to be able to play Wordle now, which makes me a little bummed, but it is a great game. It's so much fun.
Well, Lainey, at this point in time, as you heard Jonathan Knight from the New York Times say, they won't make people pay for it just yet, but he was also unwilling to make that commitment into the future. So I'm sorry I couldn't give you more comfort on that. But I want to turn now to the question that Lainey raises in her comment here about it's a great game. It's so much fun. Why? Well, joining us now from St. Louis is Ian Bogost. He's a game designer and director of the Film and Media Studies program at Washington University in St. Louis and a contributing writer to The Atlantic. Welcome to On Point, Ian.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Okay, so first and foremost, if you had to say... Well, no, let me just back up here. When did you first start playing Wordle?
Around the start of the year as well, just like Jonathan.
Okay, so it seems like that that January timeframe was really key. Do you have a sense as to why the rise of the game was so phenomenally rapid?
I mean, that sharing feature is the way that I saw it. And I think Jonathan's comments were really right. You know, that those green and yellow emoji that we all started seeing, they didn't give anything away, no spoilers, but allowed people to interpret one another's performance. But even before that, there was this kind of curiosity gap, like, what is this even? It didn't have a link to the game, and there was a bit of a puzzle in uncovering what it was that Wordle was in the first place.
Mm. So I want to talk more about the structure of the game in just a second, but it's not the first game that we've seen in the past several years that's had that kind of phenomenal virality. Does it, you know, I'm thinking of, I mean, all the way back to what, Angry Birds or Pokemon Go with its augmented reality, those amongst many others. Does Wordle... incidentally share any characteristics with those other really viral games?
When we have a game that goes viral like that, there's usually some underlying reason for it. Like the table is set in a way. Like for Angry Birds, which was way back in 2008, 2009 or so, I think it was just that people wanted an excuse to touch their new smartphone touchscreens, and that game gave them that. And with Wordle, it's this feeling of comfort and ritual of being able to do something with your coworkers or your family. It's like a smaller scale virality. You know, it's not trying to just spread as far as possible, but gives you a natural and organic reason to want to share it. And that plugs into two sensations that we have today. One is this sense that the world is totally out of control, and here's something comforting. A ritual that's comforting. And then also that everything constantly wants you to share it all the time, right? And here's something you actually want to share.
Yeah. So that comfort and ritual part, there's just some very elegant and simple things going on in the game, such as you can wake up in the morning and do it just once, right? It's not something that's asking you to play it 10,000 times a day. That is really, yeah, like you said, it's huge. And it also feels really great, if you solve the Wordle, of course, to like start your day with a little bit of an accomplishment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Face of a world that feels like it's hard to get feel good about anything.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. And that's why puzzles ended up in newspapers in the first place. You know, the Times started publishing crosswords in the early 40s, but they emerged in about 1913 and got popular in the 1920s. And it was like, oh, you know, the news is always bad, no matter what era you live in. And here's something that you can do every day that you can solve that gives you a feeling of power and of control. Jonathan mentioned, like, you know, you do it at the end of the news experience, but I actually think you do it at the start. It's the first thing you do in the day, get your coffee or your newspaper crossword or your Wordle now. and you give your sense of feeling, I can do it today. There's something I can accomplish, and that sets you up for success.
Yeah, and I mean, I think Wordle is one of the best recent examples we've had about less is more. Like, asking people to not play 10,000 times a day is part of its power.
No, that's enormous. And your listener, Lainey, mentioned, you know, she's found these like archives or something. But it's best not to do that. Just play every, enjoy it as a daily experience, because so many other things are out there trying to get you to come back to them constantly.
Yeah. Well, we've had a lot of listener response when we said we were going to do a show about Wordle. So this is Donna from Sudbury, Massachusetts, and she has this wonderful story about her husband's grandmother and a game called Jotto.
When I was first married, my husband's grandma, her name is Nanny, and she loved to play games with her own children and with us adult grandkids, and she taught me Jotto. And it was the same idea, but on paper, you know, between two people. And a fun thing about Nanny is that her children, she often skunked them in these games. And when they were little, one of them got really angry at her and said, "You're a rat fink." So from then on, in all the games that we played, she was always RF or rat fink. So every time I play Wordle, I think of Nanny, and I'm just so grateful to share it with my kids.
That's Donna from Sudbury, Massachusetts. Ian Bogost, I've never heard of Jotto, have you?
Yeah. Jotto is a very similar design on paper, basically Wordle. It appeared in the 1950s. It was really popular. And one of the things that this suggests is that Wordle is derivative. It's unoriginal. And I think that should be understood as a compliment, like drawing on and updating familiar design patterns that people have seen before. That gives them a way in, but it also continues a tradition. And Jotto is only one such example. There was a much earlier version of the similar design to Wordle using numbers called Bulls and Cows, and it went by other names. That goes back to the 19th century. And then in the 1980s, there was a television game show called Lingo that was basically Jotto on TV with the same puzzle structure as Wordle.
Now, about word games in particular, is there something received wisdom about what should make a good design for a word game that Wordle either adheres to or actually kind of blows up?
A lot of word games require or make the player feel like they require deep knowledge, that they have to be word people, or they have to have a lot of general knowledge, which is the way the crossword makes you feel, or that you have to know the grammar of the game, which is also the way the crossword makes you feel. And sometimes if you play like Boggle or Scrabble with your friends or your family and someone's like really good at it because they know all the two-letter Scrabble words, you might feel like, well, this is you know, like above me. Like I can't figure this out. And one of the things Wordle does is it ends around all of that. It makes it very accessible. It's a kind of populist word game. And there's a couple techniques the game deploys to accomplish that. The first is that the solutions are five-letter words, as you know, but they're relatively common five-letter words. Mm-hmm. And actually, the creator, Josh Wardle, curated, I think actually worked with his partner on this, curating about 2,300 solutions that are words that people know. You know, when you get moist, you know, people know that word. It's not like some esoteric scientific term or something like that. So that's one thing. You don't have to know a lot of English. You just have to be a normal person. But the second, and this is where it's really ingenious, it feels hard. The puzzles feel hard, but actually, by and large, they're pretty easy. And they're easy because the moment you get even one clue correct, even if it's out of place, it winnows down the dictionary substantially. Mm-hmm. So back on January 30, I took a look at the solution, which was rung, W-R-U-N-G. And the Wordle dictionary is about 13,000 words big. Those are all the valid words. And just getting one yellow solution, one correct letter in the wrong place, that took the possible matches from 13,000 down to 2,500. And by the time I got two greens, there were only 70 possible correct guesses that I could have made with that pattern. So the game is sort of very gently pushing you toward the correct answer, but you don't feel that way. You feel really smart and clever at the same time. So that feeling of a problem that you can solve, it gives you that sense of ritual. Wordle is really just focused on that.
Wow. And again, I just keep coming back to the fact that Josh Wardle did it out of love. And he put it out there for the world for free. And look at the impact this had. I mean, look, we've got so many comments coming in. Jacob Evans says, I love a good word game generally, and that everyone has the same word means there's a lot of community to be found with friends and family and coworkers in discussing the struggle. Yes, the struggle is real, Jacob. And Tiffany Thompson Pomeroy says, this morning I was talking with my sister and I asked her if she had seen my Wordle score. I was up late last night and completed today's puzzle shortly after midnight. She hadn't seen my post, so I opened Wordle to share my accomplishment of guessing the word on my first try. All caps there, Tiffany. Congratulations on getting it on guest number one. Well, Ian, hang on here for a second because I want to bring Katie Pierce into the conversation now. She's associate professor in the Department of Communication at the University of Washington and joins us from Seattle. Professor Pierce, welcome to you.
Hi there.
Have you done this today's Wordle yet?
I have not, but this morning when I was scrolling through, it looks like that a lot of people are talking about it and something interesting happened. So I eagerly wait. I have to say I'm one of the types that do it right after midnight, typically.
Okay.
But I did not last night.
So you end your day with that sense of accomplishment. But, you know, almost every single comment or phone call we've received has included this sharing factor. How important is that, Professor Pierce?
Yes. Well, I think it did a few things. One is it spread the game in a way that without that sharing feature, it's unlikely that most of us would have heard of this game. But remember, when we share things on social media, we're doing so intentionally that people think about the content that they put out there, whether it's a photo or sharing their opinion on, you know, their favorite movie or something political. People share this for a variety of reasons. And I think especially initially and with the sort of fun grid that there was something about kind of being part of a cool club of people that are playing this game. Additionally, given that this is a more intellectual game, there's less guilt in saying I played this than, let's say, if you were playing something like Farmville in the past that doesn't have that sort of intellectual association with it. And because it's only a few minutes a day, just once a day, it doesn't say to your social media audience, I'm wasting a bunch of time on this. It was just a brief break. And I think that the fact that it's once a day and it's pretty fast makes it appealing in terms of a social media break versus a lot of the other options we have that seemingly could go on endlessly.
Yeah, yeah. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point. We have the social aspect of it again keeps coming up. In what also surprises me as a remarkably positive social experience on social media because of Wordle. So here's Richard from Burnsville, North Carolina.
The reason I play, I'm a retired teacher. I feel like it helps keep my mind sharp. It gives me something to look forward to every day. But the thing I like about it the most is that it's kind of created a little social network for me and my friends. We kind of comment on each other's attempts and mostly get positive comments back and forth. And it's just been a fun thing to, you know, kind of keep up with each other. And I've been playing for about 3 weeks, and I just really enjoy it.
Thanks for that, Richard, from Burnsville, North Carolina. Professor Pierce, I'll ask this of both of you, but I'll start with you, Professor Pierce. Honestly, to me, it's miraculous that anything can encourage positive social interactions on social media in this day and age. But it seems as if Wordle has done that.
I think absolutely. And I think that it's a way for us right now to be social that's a fairly light lift. Everybody is exhausted right now. And at least I know for me that there's people that I want to engage with socially, but I know that they're really busy. I'm really busy. And oftentimes when you're asking people, how are you? The answer isn't necessarily going to be something positive, right? Oh, we've been ill. The kids have been out of school. We don't have daycare, whatever. And so Wordle is this way to engage with people with the lightest touch. And you're sharing this puzzle you did. People are sharing theirs. You're talking about it. And so in this way, it's a little bit water coolery, that there's not politics associated with it. It's just nice.
Yeah. Ian, what do you think about that?
Well, I mean, picking up on that water cooler metaphor, one of the things we're seeing with Wordle is there's a lot of private social sharing, what I'm calling private. I mean, things like text messages to your family group chat or in your work Slack channel for Wordle, these sorts of things. And those are different kinds of sharing experiences than putting something on your public Instagram or everyone you know on LinkedIn or what have you. So not all viral sharing, not all social media sharing is the same. And that desire and willingness to have a series of smaller scale, more curated communities is probably something we should have anyway with social media. And it's lovely that Wordle is facilitating that realization in a small way. But there's another thing I want to say, which is that there has been a modest backlash to social sharing of Wordle. And if you go on Twitter in particular, you can see people really griping from time to time about what are all these boxes and is the Wordle thing still happening, or you know, bragging about muting the word Wordle on their social feeds. And you know, every phenomenon always has some kind of backlash or even a moral panic. We haven't seen that with Wordle, but there
give it time.
Yeah, give it time. It happened with crosswords. You know, in the 20s, it was a sinful waste of time to do the crossword. And so that's another way of participating, though, in a cultural phenomenon of saying, whatever this is, it's not for me.
That is a generous analysis, Ian, because participating by dumping all over something, that's giving a lot of people innocent joy every day. But when we come back, we're going to talk more about really, I think, the role that games like this are playing in this particular moment now. So Ian Bogost and Katie Pierce, hang on. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Next week, we're going to be talking about the Electoral Count Act, that 135-year-old law which states confusingly how the electoral count is supposed to happen in Congress. It's become ever more important because, as you probably know, just last week, former President Donald Trump, in a statement, insisted that he wanted former Vice President Mike Pence to use his authority to overturn, to quote, overturn the 2020 election. So we're going to be talking about current efforts underway in Congress to modernize and amend the Electoral Count Act. So we want to hear from you. Do you think that amending it should be a priority? Are there other more important ways to protect American voting, American democracy? What are your thoughts? Give us a call at 617-353-0683. That's 617-353-0683. That's for a show we're working on next week. Today, for a bit of Friday joy, we are talking about the worldwide viral phenomenon of the word game Wordle. And I'm joined today by Ian Bogost. He's a game designer and director of the Film and Media Studies program at Washington University in St. Louis. And Katie Pierce is with us as well. She's an associate professor in the Department of Communication at the University of Washington. And if you could both just hang on here with me for another minute, I want to just focus on the word game aspect of Wordle. So we reached out to Penny Pexman, who is a professor of psychology at the University of Calgary. She studies language, how it's understood and acquired. And she, like millions around the world, is a devoted Wordle player.
I'm excited that words are having a moment. Like, as a language researcher, I feel like this is great.
And she told us that there's a specific reason why so many people are drawn to word games.
Word games are captivating because they allow you to feel like you get this little moment of play, right? So it's tapping into something that's pretty readily accessible in your mind, thinking strategically and getting to engage in some complex cognition, which for many people is quite pleasurable.
And here's the interesting thing. Pexman's previous research focused on a specific subset of word gamers, professional Scrabble players.
I'm interested in how language is processed in the brain in general and heard about competitive Scrabble, which is a little bit different than the Scrabble you might play at your kitchen table with your grandmother, unless your grandmother could be a very good Scrabble player. But competitive Scrabble players devote a lot of time and energy to practicing Scrabble. So they would engage in, you know, multiple games a week. They practice word lists. They memorize word lists so that they can have a bigger repertoire of potential plays. There's a tournament circuit. There's international rankings. So these people are devoting a huge amount of time and effort to their word knowledge. And the question that I found really interesting was, how is that changing their brains?
That's a really interesting question, because you heard a little earlier, one of our listeners said that he believes playing Wordle keeps his brain sharp. Well, so what does Scrabble tell us about whether that's actually true? Well, Pexman has found out that pro Scrabble players' brains do change in ways that help them be good specifically at pro Scrabble. For instance, they are better than average at reading words in a vertical orientation. That's something that usually stumps most people, but Scrabble players do it quickly and easily, which suggests some kind of neural remapping. They're also good at recognizing words and making decisions about them without having to know what those words mean.
And again, that's not something the average reader can do. Most people need to think about the meanings of words in order to know what they're looking at. But a Scrabble player doesn't need to know what the words mean.
But having those skills does not necessarily correlate to much beyond professional Scrabble.
It's really this you know, sort of situation where playing a lot of Scrabble makes you really good at Scrabble, but it doesn't make you smarter.
Okay, so where does Wordle fit into all of this? Clearly, there are marked differences between the two games, but Pexman thinks there's a lot of similarities that Scrabble players, or what she's found about Scrabble players, that can apply to Wordle players, too, because Wordle is so accessible, for example, people do learn it quickly, and therefore their brains adapt.
Unbeknownst to them, there are changes happening in their brains, in their language systems, and they're thinking about things like letter frequency and letter position in ways they've never thought of before.
But again, you're wondering, is there a correlation between being good at Wordle and being good at other things? When your friend brags about getting a word in one or two tries that you maybe got in six, should you hang your head in shame?
Given what we know about Scrabble, we would also have to say those changes probably only make them better at Wordle and don't make them better at anything else.
Well, that was Penny Pexman, professor of psychology at the University of Calgary. Katie Pierce, let me turn back to you here first. What do you think about sort of lessons that we can draw from Scrabble and why they might explain people's love of Wordle?
Yeah, it's interesting because, of course, certainly these professional Scrabble players, it's entirely different than, you know, regular people playing Scrabble. And so I think that there is something to be said. And we know empirically that playing a variety of games is very good for us. And there's a lot of encouragement, for example, in retirement homes for people to play games, and it just keeps the mind active. For regular people, the professional Scrabble players are on another planet. I'm curious what they think of Wordle. But I think that it's nice. And I know that when I think about the variety of ways that I might take a little mental break during the day, I certainly feel better about engaging in Wordle than I do in, for example, scrolling through TikTok or Instagram or social media generally, that there's something positive about engaging in it. But I think to that point, when we're talking about this as being a bit of an intellectual or brain endeavor, I do want to mention that not everyone's playing Wordle. Mm-hmm. I know, at least in my own social media circles, that while all of my professor friends have been playing it since early January and are really into it and talk about it and share it, certainly people in my world that have less education, are less engaged with intellectual pursuits for their career, don't seem to be aware that this game exists. That might change over time, but it's important to remember that this is certainly the intellectual aspect of it does invite some people in and discourage others.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm about to betray a secret I have. The first time I played Wordle was yesterday. So I'm also one of those millions of people who haven't been playing it until now. But your point about not everyone playing it is a good one. I think the reasons might be broader than sort of the perceived intellectualism
certainly.
But Ian Bogos, let me turn back to you here, because, you know, like, we're talking about this game in the midst of its meteoric rise. But there were some things that you said a little bit earlier that make me wonder if it's going to have a long life ahead of it. Because even though the social sharing part of it is so important and such a positive sort of feedback loop here, are there things about the game itself, if it doesn't change, that limit how much longer people will want to play it? And we'll get to the New York Times again here in a second. But what about the game itself?
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned that the solution list is finite. There's about 2,300 curated answers, and if you play that out into the future, it's about 6 years worth of daily puzzles, and then it's over. And you could add more words, I guess, but they would be different words, and they would change the feeling of the game, or you could go back to the earlier words, and maybe you'd forget some of them. But the game has a finite life, and in some sense, it's doomed, whatever the New York Times does with it. And it brings up an interesting question, which is, should things be permanent or not? And when we look at cultural forms like games, they're weird. We don't know how to make sense of them. And so we're always looking for reasons to connect them to, you know, brain activity or life lessons, instead of taking them for exactly what they are, which are these delightful trifles mm-hmm. that come and go, and sometimes, rarely, persist over years or over generations. And I think Wordle is likely not to do that. It will fizzle out in one form or another. And you know what? Maybe that's okay.
Yeah. I mean, the finiteness of things makes them more precious while we have them, honestly. But if you're the New York Times, though, you just paid seven figures for this game and you want it to, you know, produce some dividends. Do you think, I mean, from your game designer background, Ian, do you think there are modifications that they might consider making to the game over time? I mean, right now we're here with five-letter words. Maybe expand the number of letters or change sort of the feedback that you get when you guess. I mean, what would you do to change it to give more longevity?
Yeah, there are dozens of Wordle variants out there, too.
Already,
You know, already. What the Times doesn't, they might or might not do that. But what they really need is a catalog of games that they add to and remove from over time, and so that they're participating in this practice of, a comforting ritual puzzle games that the news has a century-old history with, and the Times in particular, since the crossword in World War II. So instead of what should the Times do with Wordle, or how are they going to preserve it, or how are they going to make it, you know, exactly what it is and not change it, from a business perspective, I think they would be better off thinking of Wordle as a member of a catalog. And, you know, here I wrote this book a number of years ago on games and the news, and one of the things we looked at, my co-authors and I, was that the news business didn't even realize they were in the casual games business when, you know, the Candy Crushes and Bejeweled and Tetrises of the world arose. And that whole sector, which is worth billions of dollars, is providing those services kind of outside, right? So getting back into it and reconnecting this kind of puzzle experience, this kind of joy and delight and ritual with news publications as a way of funding and underwriting newsmaking, that's something the Times has been particularly adept at with their subscriptions. So it's not necessarily a bad thing if the Times incorporates this game into their business model. That actually might be something we might want in the long run.
Mm. Katie Pierce, we'll get back to the New York Times here in a second, but it suddenly occurs to me that I've been grounding this conversation entirely in the U.S. context, but Wordle is being played around the world, right? I mean, that's the other remarkable thing about it. I mean, do we know sort of how people have been responding to it in places where obviously English is not the main language?
Yes, it's interesting. Given that the actual coding of it is so simple, it was very easy for people to make replications of it, whether it be in English or in other languages. And so I primarily study the former Soviet Union. And so I, you know, have a lot of friends and I'm keeping an eye on things. And I would say late January, I started seeing these other language duplicates pop up and people being quite keen on it. And I've also seen a lot of people engaging in a second language or a heritage language that they spoke as a child but don't speak now, and playing them to sort of do a little bit of language practice. Mm. And I think that's really fun. And people sharing these.
Can I just jump in here? Because I have two quick questions for you. I understand that you and your family members all speak Russian. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. And we do play in Russian.
So what's how does it feel different playing the Russian version versus an English language version?
Well, for me, it's quite a bit harder. It's interesting given that there's still the 5-letter limit, and so it's an entirely different source of words. Also, in Russian, nouns decline. So, for example, if I say, I'm handing the book to Meghna, it changes the word Meghna a little bit. So, what version of the word matters, and you can't do plurals. So that is limiting, but it does require your brain to think about, just like in English, how we think, okay, I need to get those vowels. I'm going to try R, S, T, M, N, the most common letters, right? It's going to be entirely different in another language. Also, I really like that I've seen languages that are in decline or languages that are endangered. A lot of communities building around those. So this is a really positive thing that people are taking old dictionaries and making Wordles. And is this going to save an endangered language? No. But is it a fun way to get heritage speakers involved in some sort of fun language maintenance? Absolutely.
I mean, I think you told our producer about in Armenian, because of the various dialects, people are having quite an emotional reaction to Wordle.
Yes. Western Armenian is a language that isn't spoken by anyone exclusively. It would be a heritage language for all of its speakers. And so, other than going to like a special school to learn it or a weekend language course, you're not going to necessarily be using it day to day with, you know, few exceptions. So people are really getting into this and really stretching their brains. And I love seeing people share these and proudly saying, you know, I am a speaker of this language that isn't so common. And I love tickling that part of my brain with it once a day.
Yeah. Well, Ian Bogost, we've just got about a minute left here. And I want to end with sort of some forward-looking optimism that even if Wordle itself has a finite lifespan, and also we don't know if it's going to be free for, you know, in the future, what are the lessons from the game that you would actually like to see, you know, other game developers use to give people that, you know, that similar joy and engagement?
Mm-hmm. I mean, you mentioned one near the top of the hour, which is that designing something for someone in particular, rather than trying to make something for the whole world, which is what we do with technology these days, that can be really powerful. And then the other thing is that, you know, it's okay for games to just be games. Despite all the wonderful stories Katie's been telling us, if we were talking about a television show or like a breakout acid jazz album or something like that, we wouldn't be demanding that those media taught us something about dying languages or that they had sort of cognitive benefits. And I think it needs to be okay both for game designers and for game players to play games for what they are, which are these fun trifles that let us manipulate the world around us for delight and comfort.
Just play. Well, Ian Bogost at Washington University in St. Louis, thank you so very much for joining us today. And Katie Pierce at the University of Washington, thank you as well. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices, and they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons, and there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.